Hello. Hello. Okay. The secret of all the schools of Buddhism, I'm going to tell you today. Unfortunately, after I tell you the secret, it may still be a secret. But the secret of all the schools of Buddhism, and the secret of other schools as well, is to be present in the moment. You got it? If you're all here, you've got it. But as with most secrets, it's easier said than done. So, coming from the Zen tradition, which I know you probably hear about as much as your own, I thought I would talk a little bit about a selection from an essay by A.A. Dogen. Dogen is a 13th century Japanese Zen master who went to China and brought Zen back to Japan. And he wrote, maybe the first essay in his collection that he put together was called the Genjo Koan. And Genjo Koan is translated as the koan of everyday life, or the matter at hand, or actualizing the fundamental point. Genjo is everyday or matter at hand or now. And koan is question or issue or what's up. So Genjo koan could be what's up now. Or what's up doc, I suppose. And there's one short selection which I want to talk about. The problem, of course, of reading from a book is we might be thinking that Buddhism is about what's in a book, or what's about this altar, or it's about something outside ourselves. So I hope that I'll be grounded in the moment as I talk about this stuff. Because Buddhism isn't some pieces of paper, glorified temples, great clothes, or anything else. To study the Buddha way is to study the self. To study the self is to forget the self. To forget the self is to be actualized by myriad things. When actualized by myriad things, your body and mind, as well as the bodies and minds of others, drop away. No trace of realization remains, and this no trace continues endlessly. Okay. To study the Buddha way is to study the self. Well, what is the Buddha way? How can you approach it? Well, the thing that's closest at hand is where we are. And even though we sometimes talk about no self in Buddhism, we start from the self because that's what our experience is. We don't study about objectified things. We study what's studying. To study the Buddha way is to study the self, is to study that which studies, is to study the illumination itself, is to study what we're, the verb of studying. So what's closest at hand? Ourselves. To study the self is to forget the self. However, if you closely look at yourself, the hard edge starts to disappear. Where I end and you begin becomes less fixed. What's happening now is not me talking to you, but the consequences of our being together. Because believe me, I wouldn't be giving this talk by myself. And in fact, even though I may give this talk someplace else, it's these circumstances that bring it its own special meaning, its own secret meaning. So to study the Buddha way is to study the self. And in fact, whatever we do, we should be studying the self. If we're involved in global politics, instead of berating others as the root of evil, we should be seeing the root of evil in ourselves. And then, of course, if we look at ourselves carefully, it's mirrored in other people. To study the Buddha way is to study the self. To study the self is to forget the self, or not to be so self-centered. To forget the self is to be actualized by myriad things. If we're less self-centered, even though we're studying the self, then anything can affect us. Anything can teach us. It's not just us putting out our projections, but us receiving and giving at the same time. Many of you may notice that with close friends or family, you often feel kind of constricted because they know who you are and you know who they are, so to speak. So you may feel kind of hemmed in by their expectations and your expectations. But in fact, your parents are wondrous people. And they're different when they're not with you than when they were their friends. And your children are the same way. You don't know who they are. And they don't know who you are. And in fact, when you meet someone who doesn't exactly know who you are, but is alert to find out who you are, it gives you much more possibilities, much more freedom. You can become the person you want to be, not the person of others' expectations or your own history. That's what a teacher can do, or a good friend. Now, who are you today? What's going on? Not, I know who you are, and you're going to say this, and I'm going to say that, and blah, blah, blah. To forget the self is to be actualized by myriad things. In fact, circumstances teach you. You don't teach circumstances. You interact together. When actualized by myriad things, your body and mind, as well as the bodies and minds of others, drop away. Your ideas of who you are and who other people are aren't so fixed. They drop away. Everyone is freer. Everyone is freer. This is something you can do. No trace of realization remains, and this no trace continues endlessly. So, you drop away body and mind, and you say, ah, I've dropped away body and mind, and then you tell everybody about it, and then it becomes a new fixed body and mind. Many of you may have met people who have had great religious experiences. And I believe they have had great religious experiences, except they can't stop telling you about them. They tell you about what happened to them 20 years ago, and you say, okay, what's going on now? So when you have some realization, let go of it and allow the new realization to come up. So what's happening in the moment, what's happening in this moment of time is some kind of serious consequences for the world. We're dividing the world up into evil and, I guess, heroes against evil. And have you noticed, if you think somebody is evil, other people get upset that you're going to think that they're evil too. And you don't study yourself because you know what's wrong with everybody else. So there's a peace demonstration today, which I imagine some of you may go to. But peace demonstrations also need a dropping away of your understanding. If you come to an understanding of a peace demonstration that you understand what peace is and nobody else does, or you demonize those people who have a different opinion than you are, you become what they are. Just like in our reaction to terrorism, if we have state-supported terrorism as a response, what's the difference? So when you're in a peace demonstration, you should be open to everyone, even those who are doing horrible things, in your opinion. You know, one example of this is, Daniel Ellsberg, who was released the Pentagon Papers and became a major force against the war in Vietnam. He was a advisor to the Pentagon on how to conduct war. And he was in Kyoto, and he happened to go into a bar. And Gary Snyder happened to be in the bar. And he spoke to Gary Snyder, and Gary Snyder did not berate or call names or vilify those who were doing war. He just spoke very rationally and plainly about it. He didn't try to demonize those. And they struck up a relationship, and after several meetings, it galvanized Daniel Ellsberg to change his opinion and to become a major force for peace. Now, if one of us had been there and had just harangued them about how evil he was and what he was doing was evil and how he was a bad person, do you think he would have changed his mind? So we have a responsibility who believe in peace to not call names, to not deny what's happening, but to not vilify in return. So you may think this is a political talk, but it's not really a political talk. It's a talk about how to conduct yourself in any situation. And you may disagree with my politics, and that's perfectly fine. But don't vilify other people. Don't demonize. You're just demonizing yourself. Study yourself. If you see evil in the world, see how you, how your conduct either increases it or has not always been the best. You know, each one of us has done horrible things in our life and great things in our life. And it's true that there are people who are very hard cases. Very hard cases. But just as we don't, at least I don't believe in capital punishment, because I think people can change. Now that doesn't mean, with that understanding, you might still have conduct war at different times and do other things. But I think when you start characterizing large portions of the world as evil and think of yourself as cowboys riding to the rescue, I don't think that's studying the self. I think that's thinking of your, of hardening a certain kind of idea of what your self is and what other people's self is. It's not dropping away body and mind. But even so, we shouldn't turn people who do those things into enemies. But it's just other people in which we need to converse with and seek the truth together with. So, to study the Buddha way is to study the self. To study that which is studying. And even if you think you know what the self is today, tomorrow ask, what is the self? To study the self is to forget the self. When you look closely at yourself, it's not so hard and fixed. To forget the self is to be actualized by myriad things. Then anything can come through and teach you. You haven't ruled out what's proper and what's improper. When actualized by myriad things, your body and mind, as well as the bodies and minds of others, drop away. Our ideas examined for what they are, just ideas. Ideas are important. We wouldn't be better off with lobotomies. But the world is much more subtle and complex than our ideas of it are. No trace of realization remains, and this no trace continues endlessly. Get off whatever your understanding is, no matter how good it is, no matter how many glowing lights are coming out of your head. That's good, and enjoy it. But move on. I wanted to mention that my mom is here today. Hi, Mom. She came all the way from New York to see me. And part of my understanding is a lineage that comes not only from my teachers, but from my family. My mom, when I was in the womb, picketed the local gas company to hire minority groups. So I was picketing on when I was in my mom's womb. So I may have some fixed ideas that go very far back. And I also wanted to say, please let us be careful about our ideas. I know some of us are very anti-American, and I don't think it's about being anti-American. Some people, you know, I was on 9/11, I was in I was in Colorado giving a series of talks. So I turned them into kind of open discussions. And there were, half the people were angry at Arabs, and half the people were angry at America. And it's crazy. I mean, there's plenty of blame to go around everywhere. But there's also plenty of things to appreciate everywhere. For me, the most moving peace demonstration I heard about was one in which the Israelis and Palestinians marched together for peace. And if the Pentagon and peace people could walk to get to march together, even though we may disagree on things, that's what it's about. Finding a solution which brings everyone together. And I wanted to my friend and great Buddhist poet Philip Whalen wrote a poem in 1968, which was pointed, but I think it's very expressive. And this poem was in the form of a letter. Dear Mr. President, this is in the October 3rd, 1965. Dear Mr. President, love and poetry win forever. War is always a great big lose. I am a poet and a lover and a winner. How about you? So, the main point I'm trying to make is to be present in the moment, to not hold on to your ideas, to not separate yourself from others, and together we can try to continue to heal the world and heal ourselves. Study yourself first. Gary Snyder, by studying himself, helped illuminate somebody else's self. And by dropping their selves, they had an effect in the world. So, are there any questions? Well, what time is it? I usually have an altar where I can see how much the incense has burned. Okay. 10:26. Well, let's sit quietly for a few minutes and let's see if anything else comes up in either in the form of a question or in form from me. Yes?
I have a question. It's about how do you study yourself and not become obsessed with yourself?
Yeah, that's a good point. Some people study themselves and find that, and get caught up in all their own faults. And it's kind of a self-indulgence. You know, the other teaching of immediacy besides the Genjo Koan, which was more in your tradition, which I almost talked about, is the Brahma Viharas. So the studying yourself could be the near enemy of studying yourself could be a kind of self-obsession where you think everything that's wrong is your fault. But that's just as bad as thinking that it's everybody else's fault. So don't do that. Easier said than done. Yes.
Thoughts for this.
Well, it's true, you know, when I was involved in the peace movement in the 60s, I was often very angry, which is understandable, but it's just more of the same. It's more of the same, and particularly as Buddhists, I think we, it's my opinion, that we have a responsibility to be able to not separate, to be for peace without separating ourselves. And I think it's also important, one second, that by clearly observing yourself and other people, it's pretty interesting that the rest of the world is saying, what are you doing? And these are not people who are saying that Saddam is a great guy. No one is saying that. But what are you doing? Okay. What are we doing? What am I doing? Well, I hope so. And that may be true. And it may be true that it's more that way than it was. And it can be more than it is. Yes. Yeah, I find myself saying not so good things about Bush. I know people always call him shrub. But you know, it's actually because because I'm frightened that I do that, rather than to treat him as, you know, an elected official who should have some respect, even if I think he's going off course. It's only the feeling that I have no power that I need to put him down. But if I find my own power, and if we each find our own power, we don't have to do that so much. Well, we could do it a little bit, but not so much. Yes.
Yes. Much of which I believe is misguided, but it's in a perverse way perhaps even altruistic because of their belief system. And then our feeling that we have this holy war thing going on too, because a lot of the belief systems of Bush and Blair are driven by the sense of a mission from God, from what I understand. And I think it's very sad.
Yes, it's very sad.
A lot of my life in confusion about God and religion and organized religion and having been brought up in the tradition of organized religion. And I'm not putting it down, but look what we're doing and all the suffering and all the alienation we're causing over our different ways of worshiping God. And why aren't we seeing that? And we've been doing that for centuries, or am I mistaken about that?
Unfortunately, I don't think you're mistaken. But, you know, I don't know, sometimes I don't know where to point the finger, because it's we who are doing that by our attachment to that which we feel. Religion, which sometimes can be the highest, can also be the most petty and discriminating, because we're just people.
Remember when I was a child, it was just ironic. This reminds me. to the Cold War because I grew up in the 50s and 60s. People began to catch on. Again, we always had this Holy War thing, an ideological conflict with the Soviet Union, and the ironic statement about kill a commie for Christ.
Right.
You know, and
right.
In a way, we were all doing the same thing.
Right. Well, I just wanted to say one, because I'm a fan of movies, there's a movie which I think expresses this so well, a Buñuel film called Nazarene. I don't know if you've seen it. It's about, I think it takes place in Mexico, and there's this Catholic priest who has such an open heart in so many ways when he deals with people. But when he gets to religious dogma, he's so priggish and narrow. It was a kind of great expression of that. Yes?
But that's interesting you said. It's helpful with what I said. That Gill's talked about the four great attachments, which are sensual desire, rites and rituals, views and opinions, and sense of self. And he always puts sensual desire. He doesn't talk about that first because people will get uptight about it. But it's interesting, it's in that order. And if you think about it, sensual desire, then rites and rituals, and then views and opinions, and then sense of self. And if you look at the amount of violence and ill will that each of those can perpetuate, I think it's in the right order, in ascending order, because a lot of what's going on in the world today is people's attachments to views and opinions. And the amount of hatred and anger people spew out to hold on to their views and opinions is amazing.
Well, each one of us, if we look at it, how attached we are to our views and our opinions. If someone says that you're a son of a bitch, or they say something bad about you, how do you feel? Rather than, oh, that's their view and opinion. And there may be something to it. Sure. Yeah, that's a very good point. We all have anger, and we can be angry at other people and angry at ourselves. And to say we shouldn't be angry is is kind of funny. But what do you do with your anger once you've noticed it? That's a question. No questions from this direction? Questions from this direction?
I have a question about the conditions that bring us to and bring different people to these judgments and views, and how those conditions are developed over their experiences in their lifetime. And way of thinking, how do you reduce those? How do you eliminate, change those conditions, or change those things that give rise to all these judgments and anger and then ill will?
Study the self, forget the self, etc. That's not, is that okay? Well, the other thing I think is very important is to be kind to yourself and to everyone you know. These are difficult times, and we should be kind to each other and do the best we can, and affect what we can affect, and what we can't affect, do the best. One of my favorite phrases, I don't know very much Japanese. I've been there a few times, but I've only learned a few phrases. But the one that has stuck with me the most is shigata ganai. Shigata ganai means it can't be helped. It's said a lot in Japan. Oh, shigata ganai. So we should affect what we can affect and do our best. Yes?
Would you read Dogen's Path to Eternal Time?
Sure. I'll also read Phelps' poem, too, if you'd like. To study the Buddha way is to study the self. To study the self is to forget the self. To forget the self is to be actualized by myriad things. When actualized by myriad things, your body and mind, as well as the bodies and minds of others, drop away. No trace of realization remains, and this no trace continues endlessly. And then I'll read two poems of Phillips. One, Dear Mr. President, love and poetry win forever. War is always a great big lose. I am a poet and a lover and a winner. How about you? And then there's this other poem, which used to be his most famous poem, but then others became more famous. Further notice. I can't live in the world, in this world, and I refuse to kill myself or let you kill me. The dill plant lives, the airplane, my alarm clock, this ink. I won't go away. I shall be myself, free, a genius, an embarrassment, like the Indian, the buffalo, like Yellowstone National Park. Well, a center like this is a real gathering of peace and understanding. And we can take nourishment from each other and also go out and try to nourish others. So thank you for having me, and I've appreciated being here.